This is Joey Escobel, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, I'm excited to share my chat with Joey Escobel. The alternative title for this week's chapter could have been Meeting the Right People at the Right Time. Joey talks about meeting Travis Zimmerman and how the prospect of working with Jason Martin led him to join Jupiter James and how they became one of Velvet Blue Music's first signings. That encounter led to Joey playing in Bon Voyage and Starflyer 59. We also talk about Joey's time in MAP and how he almost made it as a country music star in Hank Floyd. Joey recently started the Velvet Blue Music Podcast, a deep dive podcast about the bands and history of Velvet Blue. Make sure you check it out and add it to your podcast rotation. You won't be disappointed. This week on After Dark, we are breaking down Zayo's discography. So if you're a Patreon, be on the lookout for that later this week. I want to thank Daniel Terry and Joey Escobel for becoming new Patreon members. If you're interested in joining our Patreon community and checking out After Dark, you can find us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. There's also a link in the show notes. All right, enjoy this week's conversation with Joey Escobel. I was thinking the first time I saw Starflyer 59 live, I believe you were the drummer for the band. Would have been.
Oh, really?
2000 at Purple Door Fest.
That's right. Are you in Florida?
No. I grew up in DC, but that was up in Pennsylvania.
Okay. I get my festivals all mixed up, but in 2000, I for sure was the full-time drummer. Yeah. That's funny. Those days were a lot of fun.
I'm sure. There are a lot of things I remember about that, mostly about Cloud playing double sets because he played Joy Electric and Starflyer back to back, which was hilarious.
That's right. He had that that theremin. I remember he used to rock that thing.
And it was windy that day, and it kept blowing, and the theremin kept making sound, and he was frustrated trying to get it stopped.
I remember that show. I remember like the weather was kind of windy or something. Yeah. I think it affected everything. Purple Door Festival. Yeah, I think I remember that. I think the Florida one was. I think it was Cornerstone, Florida that they tried, and then it wasn't that great, and so they never did it again or something. I forgot.
Yeah, I think they did a few years. So where'd you grow up, man?
So I grew up in a small town in California called Norco. Okay. So Norco, California is about an hour inland of Los Angeles. It's just a small little horse town. It literally was a little hick town, like a lot of like horse trails and a lot of horses being rid around everywhere over there. And that was most of my life was in Norco, California.
That's cool. What got you into music?
So it's funny. My parents, they liked to listen to music, but they never... they weren't like instrumentalists. Like my dad played a little, like I think my dad plays one song on the guitar, right? And that song was Don't Come Easy by the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
So he would have a little classical guitar there and he would kind of noodle around with it and play the song and then set it down and watch TV or something right after. But we weren't, as far as playing instruments, my folks weren't really like that, but they used to play a lot of, I remember Michael Jackson Thriller was played a lot. The Thriller. And whenever we would do the lawn, we would do yard work, my dad would blast like Motown. So it would be like Smokey Robinson, Stevie Wonder, stuff like that, you know. So music was always playing in my house, but then, you know, never any jam sessions or anything.
Yeah. What led to you playing and picking up drums?
Oh, dude, this is funny. This is a funny story. So I had a friend, he's still my friend actually, but so I have a friend named Dustin that I met in junior high school, and I would go over his house and spend the night, and his dad would have he had a CD player, like a tower CD player, I don't know what you call those things. It's a stereo, and he would have these $300 Bose speakers. I never heard, I didn't know any of those high-end speakers existed at the time, right?
Yeah.
So we would go over, I would go spend the night. He would put on like Queen, like Eric Clapton, Cream of Clapton, Iron Butterfly, all like a bunch of classic rock, because that's what Dustin used to listen to growing up. So we would listen to that through those multi, like, you know, $1,000 speakers. And that's what kind of got me interested in music, thinking like, okay, like music is cool. It's not just, you know, Michael Jackson or whatever. Hearing the drums and hearing everything coming out of those speakers just interested me, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of got me into music. What got me into playing in a wanting to play in a band was kind of a funny story. So I had a crush on this girl in junior high, right? She sat in front of me. Her name is Lacey. She's not going to listen to this, probably. And so I used to kind of have a crush on this girl, but she used to like all the jock guys. I was terrible. I still am terrible at sports, actually. And I thought, like, man, there's no way this girl is going to show me any attention at all. And so we had this special event happened like during lunchtime. It was a live band playing like in our auditorium, right? And it was a cover band. And matter of fact, it was a Say No to Drug, like a Dare. Okay. Cover band playing for us at lunchtime. So guys would come out there and playing guitar and soloing and you know, shredding, and then in between every song they would say, hey, make sure you don't smoke pot, you know, make sure you don't do drugs. And but the funny thing that caught me was that this girl Lacey was going bananas. Like, she was like, oh, she was going crazy because, you know, the guitar player was cute and singing his heart out, whatever cover song that was at the time. And so at that point, I'm like, you know what? I could join a band, I think. I'm not going to play sports. Maybe I could, you know, pick up, you know, an instrument. And first, it wasn't the drums. It was guitar. And my brother Phil needed a drum set because we're dedicated, right? So I decided to play guitar, and I made him out of like these buckets and out of these, you know, like my dad had all a bunch of junk. He still has a bunch of junk in his garage, right? But he had these big barrels and then these buckets, right? And so I, out of this big cardboard barrel, I made a bass drum out of it. And I made like out of scratch, I made like a bass drum pedal. Like I went and try to figure out a bass drum pedal, like how, nice. You know, I engineered it. And so I made him like a fake drum set and a guitar. And then, but, you know, I switched because I was more interested in drums, because when I built the thing, I thought it was, oh, these drums are actually pretty cool. So that's how I started playing. I had my brother Phil teach me, you know, a couple of Striper songs.
Nice.
And like from you know that record "To Hell from the Devil,"
Devil, yeah.
There it is. And he taught me a couple of those drum beats, and that's kind of how things kind of started. So that's how things got rolling with me being in music and being in a band.
That's awesome. And then you started playing in bands in like high school.
Yeah. So what happened after that? I tried to, but I became a Christian in 1994-ish, or around that time, and my friend invited me to this, you know, this local Baptist church in Norco, and so I went to this church, and I ended up being a drummer in the praise band because I kind of knew how to play drum. I wasn't great, you know, I couldn't keep timing that well, but so I was the only drummer. Like they didn't, you know, they didn't have a drummer for a while before that. So they had me play, and I would play every single week, and also in practice for about 3 years. So that's what kind of got me into playing, playing in a live band. But in the congregation of that church, I met a guy named Travis Zimmerman, and Travis Zimmerman is the, you know, the lead guy, the songwriter for Jupiter James, which was my first band. So my brother Angelo, who's also, you know, playing music in the praise band, he comes to us and he's looking uncool, right? He has like long hair and he's smoking in the side of the in the side of the church. And he comes and said, "Hey, I got these songs," and he throws me a demo tape. "How about you guys play for me?" And so I'm like, "Oh, dude, you actually have a tape? Like, you actually have like music on a tape?" And on the way home, I put it in my truck. I just had like a crappy little 88 Ford Ranger, you know, but it was like a fully produced like studio recording. And Ange and I were like going crazy. We're like, "Dude, this guy wants us to play for him." And that's kind of that's how I joined like a non-worship Christian band. Yeah. Even though we considered ourselves a Christian band. And then on top of it, like the cherry on top is, you know, Ange and I were really into Tooth and Nail Records. And so, you know, like I remember my friend Chris Mead from high school gave me a booklet of like a catalog, like a Tooth and Nail catalog. And Angelo saw this band called Starflower 59. He's like, "Dude, this guy looks cool. Look at his sideburns." Yeah. And he's wearing this like really long sweater, like with the stripe. I think you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. He's like, "Dude, that guy looks cool." And so he buys, you know, Angelo buys, you know, the silver album, and we're kind of fans already. So Travis says, "Hey, I know this guy named Jason Martin from Starflower. Matter of fact, we played on this compilation, Artcore, you know, the Artcore compilation as this band called Red Timber, and the song was called Lemonade. I guarantee you we could get signed to a record label, either Tooth and Nail or something else. We just need to learn these songs. We need to play for these guys. And then we're set." So Angela and I were like looking at each other like, how did this fall in our laps? I have, you know, from playing worship music only to, you know, playing shows in LA and then having these guys interested in us, you know? So that was kind of a long answer. Sorry.
That's cool. So at that point, he wasn't connected with Velvet Blue yet.
So he knew Jason Martin. Jason and Jeff Cloud were partners in Velvet Blue Music.
Okay.
So I guess that's the next part of the story. He says, "Hey, we're going to have a showcase at this same church, like for a youth group. They're going to come out and they're going to watch us play our songs, you know," which is pretty much all the songs off of Called Us Paul, the first record. And so the time came, they came in. You know, like we were starstruck. We saw the guy with the sideburns, you know, we saw Jeff Cloud and their wives were there. And I don't even think they were married at the time, sitting in the back. And so Ange and I and Travis looked at each other like, "Dude, we better rock that. We're going to rock." Right. So we're going nuts. And Angelo's like, you know, wailing on the bass and you know, the youth group kids were going crazy. And these guys leave after about half the set.
Oh, man.
And Ange and I were like, well, let's finish up the set, but what happened? Like, what did we do wrong? And it turns out they were just hungry. They just wanted to get something to eat. But they told Travis the day after, hey, we want to sign you as one of our first bands on Velvet Blue Music, Jupiter James.
Oh, that's awesome. So that was your connection with Jason, and it kind of struck through your trajectory. That's cool.
Yeah, a friend of a friend. That's how we ended up meeting him. So Jupiter James kind of fizzled out. Travis joined Bon Voyage as a bass player. So at that time, Matt McCarty of Driver 8 was the drummer of Bon Voyage. But Matt would be, you know, sometimes he'd forget to show up to shows. I think he was like, you know, busy. Yeah, he was busy with Driver 8 and working a lot and stuff. So Travis says, hey, learn every single one of these songs and know it like by heart. And I'm going to try to get you into Bon Voyage, right? And then eventually Matt McCarty would quit. You know, Travis would tell Jason, hey, Joey, you know, the drummer of Jupiter James, he knows all the Bon Voyage songs. Let's get him on and let's just not miss a beat and let's get going with that. So I officially joined Bon Voyage, like, you know, after a show or two of Bon Voyage. And that's what I did for about, I think Bon Voyage only lasted like 5 live shows.
Yeah.
And then I think Julie was expecting her first child and then that was it.
But from there, eventually you end up in Starflyer 59, replacing Wayne Everett.
Oh, yeah. Dude, talk about big shoes to fill. So you get, okay, Wayne Everett, super tall, super cool looking, like totally, you know, has total charisma, speaking French on stage, singing backup vocals, right? He's you know, the lead guy from Lassie Foundation. You know, he was in Prayer Chain. He had so much to bring to the table. He leaves, and then Jason's like, hey, you want to do a couple of tours of Starflyer? So all I knew how to do was kind of know how to play the drums, you know, not that great. And I knew the Starflyer song because I was already a fan. And that was a little tough. I was a little insecure at that point.
Yeah, big shoes to fill for sure. But you made a record with Starflyer 59. You're in the canon forever, which is super cool.
I saw
you vibe with Starflyer a few times, I'm sure. Yeah, you're sandwiched between Wayne and Frank, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And how do you, and even with Frank, and I'm going to be interviewing Frank next week. Yeah. And, you know, that same idea. He's not just a drummer. The guy is a genius when it comes to making sounds, you know, and writing songs. And those, they both were like that. It really was, I was kind of insecure for a little bit. So I met Josh through my friend Noah, who was the lead guy / songwriter for this country band that I was playing in on the side called Hank Floyd. So Noah says, hey, I know this guy in Riverside named Josh Dooley that is a great player. Let's see if we could bring him in and try to play lead or just try to play some riffs or whatever. And so I met him actually in my parents' garage. He came and started playing he was pretty much the lead guitar player for Hank Floyd. So, and Map kind of started when Josh kind of got tired of playing country music and he wanted to leave Hank Floyd. And Josh said, you know, hey, I have these songs. Would you guys mind playing live with these songs? And these songs are like on the first Map EP.
Yeah.
You know, Argyle Smiles and Tell Me and all that stuff, right? Well, yeah. I don't think Tell Me was on it. Anyway, so when we started playing it, like Angelo and I started playing with Josh, it just connected. It just felt really good. Josh is, you already know, he's an excellent player. Yeah. And for some reason, some of our best, like most creative ideas came out of that band, Map.
Yeah. And then from listening to your episode with Josh on the podcast, you got him connected with Cloud and Jason.
Uh-huh. To Velvet Blue. Right. Yeah. And he knew Cloud for a long time ago. And then like maybe 10 years later, like he said, it was a full circle. All of a sudden I'm in reintroducing him to Jason and Jeff. And matter of fact, I introduced him back, you know, to Jason when Hank Floyd was recording a demo and at Jason's house, nice. At his house. And so obviously Josh is in the band at the time. And so Jason knew Josh, and that's how that reunion happened.
You and your brother left Map or quit, or the band dissolved because of going the wrong way in a car.
And funny enough, we're called Map, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Somehow we lost our way. But yeah, that was, I'll tell you, for years I would rethink about that breakup. We were just, I was calling Josh names, Josh was calling me. It was a bad breakup. And basically, what happened, like, this is before GPS anything. Yeah. It was just Thomas guides. And so I would be driving and Josh would have the Thomas guide. And so I would say, hey, where do I turn? What do I, you know? And so we took a wrong turn somewhere. Like it was something like 5 hours the wrong direction. Oh. It was like Dumb and Dumber. It was Dumb and Dumber. Right? Like it was 8 hours the wrong direction or something. Right. And we just got fed. On top of it, it wasn't a great tour. Like we were opening up for John Wilkes Kissing Booth and they were so good and we just felt like little kids and we weren't selling anything and you know we weren't even selling stickers, you know. So we got fed, we were all just fed up and we all just quit like in Colorado or something like that, you know.
yeah from listening to that episode with Josh, I know you went back to playing in Hank Floyd. Is that all you did for a while, just kind of laying low, or?
Yeah, so after that I was still in Starflyer. Okay. But I was kind of, you know, because when I was in Map, I was still in Starflyer. And I think I just got fed up because at one point I knew, like, you know what, I thought Leave Here a Stranger was going to get us,
huge.
Was going to break through.
Yeah.
You know, because we're getting all these really good reviews. Like, a matter of fact, I think LA Times in the year like 2001 named our album the album of the year at that time.
Nice.
And we were like, holy cow, this is gonna happen. And then it just kind of stopped, and I think like we hit a ceiling. And so I think I just got fed up, like, man, I've been working for you know, for 3 years and it just kind of stopped. What happened? Yeah. I don't know. So I got frustrated. I'm like, I'm getting tired of playing at churches and you know, calling off of work and then kind of losing money that way. And so I ended up quitting all bands. And then Noah gives me a call and says, hey, we're still, we're looking for a new drummer. Why don't you rejoin Hank Floyd? And we have a tour with Dierks Bentley in about a month, right? Like a full on like tour with Dierks Bentley. And before that, he's touring with Alan Jackson. You know, he's touring with, I think his name is Nichols. I forget these country guys' names. I forget, but we start, Carolyn Don Johnson, we're playing with Shelby Lynn. All of a sudden it's like, oh wait, shoot. I kind of plateaued over here. But when I rejoined, when I switched lanes, all of a sudden I have a showcase with Capitol in Nashville and with Capitol or Sony in Nashville. And so we're like, okay, I guess I could, kind of say I'm sorry for quitting and kind of pick up where I left off. So that's what happened. So, again, we thought this was going to be, completely different genre, but we thought this was going to be like, oh, this is all my hard work. Yeah. Exactly. All my hard work is all leading to here. So that's kind of what I did after Starflyer 59 and MAP.
Saturday night with a buzzing in your body, feeling alright. Don't try to stop it, slow it down. Well, listen up, sister, I can tell you someone. Stick with me and we'll have our fun. Cause it's a long way, baby, long way home.
And did any of those big labels work out?
Oh man. So they ended up liking us. I remember going to the offices of Sony Nashville, and they had us up in the office and they said, hey, good show and everything. We're not going to sign you.
Oh.
And here's the reason why. And by the way, I'm like 22 years old and 23, 24 years old around that age. He's like, you know what? If you notice, most country music artists are in their 40s, right? And there's a reason why we do that is because 30-year-old soccer moms aren't going to listen to a bunch of 20-year-olds talking about life, talking about breakups, talking about whatever. So, but thanks for coming by. See you later.
Which is funny how country music went that like weird pop like route later and it went super young.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and at that time they were actually looking for. Now this is when Coldplay was huge. They were always huge, but they were starting out and there was a lot of buzz. They were looking for a Coldplay country artist, and they thought Hank Floyd would be it. And then they just kind of thought like, well, maybe we shouldn't do this. So but you are right. Now you look at country music and it's all just a bunch of young guys.
Yeah.
Mostly, you don't have your Alan Jackson banana mustache, people.
That's so crazy. That's funny. And then music took a backseat for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So after, okay. So, we were all kind of upset about that. We kind of lost. We were still playing. We weren't. I remember we had a tour with Patti Loveless after. So things were still kind of rolling. But I think we just stopped accelerating.
And yeah, so that rug got pulled out from under you, and it's like, okay, well, what?
Exactly. What now? Yeah. And we weren't like, I think the same thing happened to Dwight Yoakam, but then Dwight Yoakam went to LA and created this whole scene in LA, and he ended up being like one of the biggest country artists. And we didn't do that. We were like, forget it. So I fell in love with a girl, my wife, the one that joins me on the podcast, and I decided to go to school full time and become a software engineer.
That's cool. And then what led you out? Where are you now? Idaho?
So I am in Idaho right now. Yeah. So it is. Well, where are you living? Where do you live?
I'm in Philadelphia.
You're in Philadelphia. Okay. So California is just super expensive.
Yeah.
To live in, and so there were a bunch of software jobs opening up over here in Idaho, and I could buy a fairly, like a, you know, like a 1700 square foot house for $150,000.
Yeah.
You know, and so I already had equity in a house in California. So we thought, you know, let's just cash out, get a house out there, get out of California, and just live the country life. And so we did that about almost 3 years ago. And yeah, there's no regrets. Yeah, we love it out here.
Well, you just recently started the Velvet Blue Music podcast. What piqued your interest in doing a podcast, and why Velvet Blue Music? I mean, obviously you have relationship and capital in Velvet Blue, but
yeah. Okay. So, and you're kind of tied in this too, Brian. I'll tell you how this is. So I'm listening to Matt Carter what's the Tooth and Nail one?
It's labeled.
Labeled, right? So I'm listening to that, and I'm like, man, you know what? Velvet Blue, like Jeff signed a bunch of really cool bands that probably, they're not going to sell as much as Under Oath. Uh-huh. But you know, Brandon Ebel labels some bands like cred bands and other ones like money bands. But I always thought Jeff was a guy that always picked cred bands. And he always picked bands that, you know, they weren't top notch at the moment, but he invested in them. And to where they could grow and they could make good records, you know, all like so on and so forth. So I said, man, for the last 20 years, you know, Jeff had, you know, Doug Burge, Attender Paul, Frank Lenz,
Gary
China.
Murray. Yeah.
Exactly. Like a ton. I'm like, why isn't anybody stepping up? So I go to Josh Dooley and I say, Josh, start a Velvet Blue Music podcast, because people like you, you know how to talk clearly, you're articulate, and you have credibility. They'll listen to you, right? So he's like, maybe. And so I kept bugging him probably once a month for about 4 months, and then he said, hey, like, you're way more interested than me in this. Like, why don't you start it? Because you kind of did some stuff with you know, Tooth and Nail and Velvet Blue. I mean, they'll listen to you. You played in MAP. You played, you know, with some Pony Express songs, Jupiter James. Like, why don't you just try it? And so I said, why don't I just try it? So we made a kind of a fake episode and sent it to Jeff, like a proof of concept. And then Jeff kind of gave me okay, you have full reign to do whatever you want, whoever you want to interview and do this thing. So go ahead. So that's, yeah, we're about not as many episodes as you, Brian, but, I decided let's do it. I would listen to As the Story Grows, frequently too, and kind of get some ideas from you and also with Matt Carter. And so, you could say the Velvet Blue Music podcast is a combination of all you guys. So does that make sense?
Yeah. You're interviewing Frank Lenz next.
Yeah. And listening to, and you know, you probably have a lot of Frank Lenz. As a matter of fact, you interviewed Frank Lenz, right?
Talk to Frank.
Yeah. I listened to that. That guy's an amazing guy. So, I'm going to try to, not step on your toes and try to do something solely in the Velvet Blue realm, you know. But anyway, so we're I'm just starting out, and it seems like I'm kind of catching my stride.
Yeah. There any thing particular you found difficult or frustrating or challenging so far in your podcast experience?
Right. Yeah. After the Fine China episode, I told myself I'll never drink 3 IPAs before an episode ever again, because I kept stuttering more than I'm doing right now and repeating myself, talking over, I was talking over Rob like crazy. So it took, I probably edited out 20 minutes of me saying and repeating myself and talking over. So it actually did more damage drinking alcohol while doing this. So I said, okay, I'm going to not drink alcohol during an interview. And so Josh, the next one, it's not so bad. And same thing with Heather. So I'm gonna remember not to drink any beers before that, because I think I did it just to calm myself down. But I think I'm calm now. Yeah. And then also, like, you're really good at this. You're good at letting people talk. I need to learn that, and I get excited and I start interrupting. So I'm still learning. From the Bryans of the podcast world. So.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.